To see examples of what we talk about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
Hey guys, we are excited to have with us today Lindsay and JL from Onishi Press. So if you haven't heard of Onishi Press, they're a Missoula, Montana-based independent comic book company. We've discussed and reviewed their work on previous episodes of the podcast. You can find more about them and about the company at onishipress.com, and we've got a link to them on the blog post. You guys just began a new Origins Kickstarter campaign on July 1st, I think it was, and you've got two new books, Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter Act 1 and Onishi Press Anthology Number 10. Listen, Lindsay, JL, thanks for coming on to talk about the campaign. Do you guys want to talk a little bit more about it?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, thanks for having us here. I mean, we're super excited about that. Yeah, do you want
to... Oh, you're going to toss it over to me?
Yeah, throw you under the bus.
Okay, well, we're doing a big campaign. This is actually going to be our sixth Kickstarter campaign for a comic or otherwise illustrated book. We've done mostly comics and one illustrated book. So far, we are 5 for 5, so, you know, we're doing all the finger crossing and salt over the shoulder and all of that, and working our butts off on this one, because it's a pretty big goal, and that's because there's two books. So in the past, we've only ever done one book, and we're just shaking it up this time. We wanted to pack as much into this Kickstarter as possible. So we are funding Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter, which we're calling an artthology, which is one continuous story that was all written by JL and edited by myself, Lindsay. But it's actually illustrated by 4 different illustrators. So it's sort of a collection unto itself, but just one continuous story. That one is, I call it a horror comedy.
I want to call it a zomcom, you know, like okay. Like a rom-com only with zombies, like instead
you
of...
You trademark that?
I want to. I don't know. I got to look into how to like trademark.
I like it. Let's just start using that all over the
yeah,
place.
Yeah. So it's a zomcom, and it basically parodies like all of the classic, you know, zombie horror tropes. So like wanting to write this character who's a zombie hunter, but he's also half goblin, so this is like a fantasy world where there's like orcs and elves and humans running around, but it's modern fantasy world, so like they wear business suits and do normal things like go golfing with friends, you know. So like I was like, all right, well, cool, I got that part, it's the modern fantasy world, that's cool, but like which zombie apocalypse is it? Because, you know, there's all these different subgenres of zombie apocalypse where it's like, is it, you know, a retrovirus? Is it aliens? Is it a curse? Is it, you know, like, did hell fill up? Like, what's going on here? And, you know, each zombie movie has its own version of what's going on. But in Mr. Guy, instead of doing that, the whole thing is he's trying to figure it out. So he's going through all these different tropes, exploring them, trying to be like, well, is this the cause? You know, because if he could figure out the cause, maybe he could stop the apocalypse and save himself and get back to his, you know, his regular routine, his life, you know, find his happy place. So each chapter is an exploration of a different trope. And with that, I thought it would be really fun to kind of write them in a slightly different style each. And so, like, we've been doing anthologies for a while. I mean, this is our 10th anthology, and the idea hit me. I was like, it would be so cool if each chapter was illustrated by a different artist to really push the envelope on, like, the stylistic differences in the writing. And, you know, this is Act 1, which is arcs 1 through 4. So there's only 4 chapters in this one, but, you know, it was kind of like the test run, and it works really well. Like, I am... so stoked about the way each chapter just kind of seamlessly transitions to a completely different artist with a different sensibilities, but nothing feels out of place. The story flows. It's got like it's like a four-course meal of zombie apocalypse, maybe. You know, like, I don't know, that came out weird.
Delectable.
Yeah.
It's like I like the idea of it having that kind of thematic unity, though. You know, you've got, because we all love anthologies here. And yeah. That idea of having those different creators, those different artists doing different chapters, but it has that unity, is a really, really cool idea.
Well, yeah, and I mean, oh, thank you so much, first of all. But like the idea of like the anthology is something, I mean, obviously this is our 10th one that we're doing and we love it. We love that idea. Usually it's a theme, right? Like the theme will be like, I don't know, people with dogs who think they're cats, an anthology, you know. Yeah, we got to do that.
Yeah, that people buy that up.
You know, that's
nailed it.
Nope, that down.
But you're good in the morning.
But like, what if the theme was actually one narration, you know? So that's why we coined the term, or we're calling it, I don't want to say we coined the term because it's not like other people are using it, but we're calling it an artfology. So it's the art part that is the collection, you know?
And can we talk about the artists?
Sure.
Can we talk about the artists? Oh my gosh.
Well, the artists on Mr. Guy are, first of all, this guy. He's mainly the illustrator. He's usually an illustrator alone, or sort of a co-creator. So this time he's the writer and the illustrator of the first arc.
Kind of like the pilot arc, backstory arc, like it sets the stage. So I thought, yeah, I'll
plus
do that
he
one.
Wanted to do the character designs so that then when he handed it off to other artists, there would be. And then the second arc is illustrated by Walter Ostley, which if you guys are into indie comics, you might know. He did Metal Shark Bro.
Hacksaw, Shiver Bureau.
Those are the three big ones I think that he's done.
It's Nana right there. He did the art for that.
Oh, right, I forgot about this.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Walter is just amazing. He's a beast of an artist. He's just pumping out these stories, and they're just amazing. He does all these like YouTube how-to videos. I mean, I love him. Anyone that knows him loves him. He's just a great guy, great artist.
Great hair.
Great hair.
The third arc is done by Diana Camaro, who is an artist that we worked with once before. She illustrated a short comic that I wrote, and we were kind of paired up with her when I actually was seeking to work with a friend of hers, and the friend said, well, I'm not available, but my friend Diana is getting into comics and she's great. So I looked up her work and I was like, ooh. So I worked with her on this kind of gross, funny little comic and just loved it. The experience was fantastic.
So
we hit her up again for arc 3 and she nailed it. I'm gonna go ahead and say that arc 3 is the grossest. There's so much zombie slaying and gore, and it's disgusting.
And you could tell she really enjoyed it, you know, like the little details are just like, yeah, you had a lot of fun with this.
Like, she knows blood splatter. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But it's also cartoony, it's fun, it's soft. It's not like that, like,
yeah,
really, like, dark gore. It's like, cartoon guts, mm-hmm. You know, like...
Not like you're gonna need a parental warning.
I mean...
Well, it's maybe a bit on the line.
Yeah.
Depends on how hardcore your kids are, I think. What kind of entertainment do they normally take in? And then the fourth arc is by J.C. Chase, who is an indie artist... who's
a YouTuber,
really,
content creator.
Yeah, just kind of starting to cut their teeth on comics. They've worked with us on two comics so far in anthologies. And then this is going to be the first, obviously, in an artthology. So with that four-person art team together, like, the styles all seem to, like, just zipper together.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes.
Yeah, none of them are extremely disparate, so they all kind of... They fit together, but they're different enough that it's a really exciting, like, turn of the page to see what's coming next.
Now, you guys horror movie fans, I'm assuming.
You know, I grew up, like, my older sisters often babysat me, and then they would have their friends over, and they'd be watching horror movies, and, you know, I think I've been watching horror movies since I was, like, 4 or 5. So, like, you know, it was pretty formative for me. And I really love the old, like, you know, practical effects, like,
you know,
rubber masks and guts made of SpaghettiOs and, you know, just, like, really cool stuff like that. And, you know, I say guts made of SpaghettiOs. I'm joking. Like, I really think a lot of the practical effects artists are like, amazing.
I don't know. I've seen a couple movies that it looks like SpaghettiOs to me.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's that, too. And, like, I don't know which is more fun, but, you know, like, I always loved, like, the old, like, the original, like, Nightmare on Elm Street and, you know, Hellraiser and all that stuff. All of, like, the George Romero movies, you know, like, there's just... They tickle me. They make me feel like a kid again, you know.
What is it about zombies, though, that makes it so popular now? Is there, like, an underlying thing going on? Is it about, like, what's going on in the world? Or is it just people... Or is it just the Evil Dead or the Walking Dead? Or is it just a good... lends itself to a good comic book or a movie, you know, the idea of it.
So I think...
Let's dig into zombies. I love this topic.
Zombies, as far as I know, I mean, I think very few people write a zombie story without it being social commentary. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, that depends on, like, the impetus of the writer might have, like, a different bent on their social commentary. But it's always about people in general, right? I mean, like... You know, the Walking Dead show, you know, like, that was actually much more about people and social commentary. And occasionally there was a zombie, and, oh, no, they got to shoot the zombie. And then they go back to, like, people drama, you know. But, like, George Romero's, like, anytime I've heard him talk about, you know, the original Night of the Living Dead, I mean, the whole concept there was, like, it was his indictment of society at large, you know, was the mindless hordes and what they did and how, like, no matter how hard you try not to become one of them, eventually you do. You just can't live in this world where there's this growing, like, mindless horde mentality all around you all the time. Eventually they're going to get you. And, like, is it possible to hold out? Is it possible to not become part of that? So I think it's very much like an outlier is the hero, and, like, I think a lot of people feel like there's this thing about them that makes them different or weird or kind of special, and they want to hold on to that. And, like, the rest of the world is trying to take that away. And can you just stay weird? You know, like, that's to me, that's what the zombie apocalypse is. It's like, can you just stay weird, please? You know, try it.
That's a good interpretation. I like that. Mine is a lot more dark.
well, go ahead. What do you got to say about it?
It's tough to talk about, because I don't want to come down on anyone for their taste, but it might sound like I'm trying to do that. But I think that a lot of the appeal of zombie apocalypse entertainment is that you can completely get away with horrific violence.
Yeah.
Because it's justified, because these people aren't people anymore, and they are trying to kill you. And I think that that's where a lot of the horror genre comes from, right? Is, like, relatively senseless violence that you can enjoy without feeling bad. And I think that the zombie genre takes that almost as far as I can think of anything going, because you are put in the situation where your only chance of survival is killing these things, and it's often en masse. So you get, you know, blood splatter, like we were talking about, and it's like this gleeful, fun, enjoyable thing with no moral ramifications.
That's also a good point.
Cheap thrills.
I have to say, that is a really good point, and that's, I think, why Walking Dead resonated with so many people, because that seems to be all zombie storylines and movies were for a long time. And then Kirkman came in and started writing this book that was more about the people, the survivors, and we've seen a big shift in zombie from basically just being gore porn to being human interest stories. So, you know, I really like both your interpretations of that. That's really good. So, where would you say this book falls in for all those?
Honestly, this is more like dad humor kind of, like, you know, like, a lot of it is, like, deadpan delivery jokes at the camera, like, you know, Mr. Guy talking to the audience, that kind of thing, like, very reactionary, and a lot of, like, puns and word plays and self-aware humor and meta self-referential humor, that kind of thing.
The fourth wall is shattered.
Nice. And I think you know, it's like there's a lot of sub-commentary going on, and especially like, so this, like I said, this is just act one. There's going to be act two and three, so 12 arcs total, 12 chapters total, for book one altogether. And it kind of, the dissection, the social dissection, the commentary, the things he's trying to figure out, they get a little bit more in depth, and it builds on itself. But at least with the first book, I feel like a lot of it is just like action and deadpan humor, dry jokes, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know that it necessarily, it's not very dark, I don't think. I don't think it's like dark commentary.
No, it's pop culture commentary.
Yeah, it's more pop culture, like jokes and references, that kind of thing.
I mean, if I were going to compare it to anything else in the genre that exists that I know of, I'd say Shaun of the Dead, which is my 1000% hands down favorite zombie anything, except for Mr. Guy, of course.
Nice. I like it.
Well, those old Evil Dead movies, they were kind of like pretty, a couple of them were pretty funny, actually. You know, not the first one, but the second and third one.
Yeah. So,
yeah, we definitely reference, there's some Evil Dead style jokes. I mean, Ash is a hero to us as well, you know.
I think while you were writing a lot of it, we were watching Ash versus Evil Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Now, how do you guys work with the artists? Do you give them full scripts? Do you give them a synopsis? How much input did they have? How much writing do you guys do? I'm assuming you guys, I know you just draw and write, but how do you work with the people?
So for this one, I wrote a very detailed script. I mean, even like sound effects and how the sound effects should be depicted and
like an Alan Moore
dialogue, and everything is broken down. Very, very neat. I'm like I want to say like
Virgo.
Yeah, I'm a Virgo. I get very neat and specific about the details. But at the same time, for the visuals, like how things were to be interpreted, what I did was I gave all the artists my art and was like, this is how I draw it. The rest of this is kind of a draw this in your style sort of practice, but with an entire chapter. You know, do this chapter in your style. And, you know, these are artists that I love. I really love their artwork. I'm a fan of their art, you know. I don't want to backseat drive them, or, you know, I don't want to, like, micromanage. I want to see what they do with this character. So, you know, it's more like directional. Like, in this panel, these things are happening. But how you draw them, I mean, just give me your art. I want to see it, you know. Like,
so you're not working Marvel style or anything like that. You're just you're not laying out the page, but you're telling them, I want four panels here, and this is what goes in each panel, and whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I understand that. I mean, are they all, do they all do their own work completely, or is there Photoshop guys that do Photoshop? Are they guys that do, like, actual on pages, or is it all, like, computer art, or is it all different?
I believe this was, everyone working on this worked 100% digitally. Okay. I think one or two of the artists might have used a flatter to speed up their process, but other than that, it was all, like, you know, just one person wrecking crews coming in and just nailing it, you know?
Are they giving, like, a deadline? Like, you have to have this done in a month, or in 2 months, or 3 months, or...?
We had to be a lot more lenient about the deadline than we originally thought.
It's been a weird year.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so that kind of put everything on its head. And, you know, we were happy to work with people and to make sure that they were okay. And if they needed anything, we helped them however we could. And, you know, and everyone was just great about it. We you know, good communication. It helps when you like someone. You know what I mean? Right.
Are you getting books in the stores? Are you looking to get books in the stores? Is it all just going to be Kickstarters? Or, I mean, how does that work? Because I'm interested in how you guys publish and how you guys are selling and what the future is and all that.
That's a good question right now.
You know, right now it's mostly the Kickstarter is the pre-sales that are helping us get the books made, you know, and we're trying to keep all of that like kind of wholesale cost for people. And what we would love to do is get it into stores all over. But right now, like, our distribution is pretty much Lindsay and I writing emails and making phone calls and
going to conventions.
You know,
going to conventions.
Right.
Anyway.
It would have been going to conventions. But like we said this year, you know, 2020. So we're not doing the convention circuit this year. But, you know, we got to see what's going to happen also with the big shakeup with Diamond and what kinds of distribution models might become a possibility to us that weren't before as that power vacuum is filled, you know, like.
I'm pretty hopeful about the stuff with Diamond then, as far as the changeovers.
I do think it's going to hurt some people. I do think some folks that are really reliant on the way things have been, it might be hard for them to adapt, and that might hurt a little. But I do think a lot of people, like alternative distribution models that exist that couldn't get the traction are now going to get the traction if, you know, when Diamond just kind of lowers a little, you know. I don't want to like talk about other businesses that I don't really know 100% about. But I do think that there's going to be a lot of alternatives that might gain a little bit more traction, and that might help a lot of indie creators.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping. Diamonds, so far, had always been out of our reach. We weren't printing in big enough numbers. We just have not yet had the overhead to, like, you know, pour as much resources as you need to print that many books and then to have the clout to actually get them into stores. You know, we're a pretty small operation, and Diamond really wants big numbers, big results, and that just was kind of beyond us. And we were always kind of nosing around and, like, thinking maybe this time, but it wasn't happening. So we're hopeful that some, you know, alternatives are going to start popping up and be more viable for people like us who are doing much smaller scale stuff.
Yeah, hopefully. It would be nice to see more of the indie productions being able to come out of this, because, I mean, let's face it, it's a hard year for anybody trying to do smaller run stuff. I can imagine that you guys are probably feeling the push. Are people joining the Kickstarter as much as they used to? Are you guys seeing lower numbers than normal?
It's hard to say. We're only a few days in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those things that it's like little spurts where all of a sudden you get like four or five more backers and your percentage goes up, and then like it kind of just nothing for like
Yeah.
So it could go up really quickly. I mean, it could go up this afternoon. But yeah, it definitely feels a little bit less steady than Kickstarters in the past have been, and that's a little scary, but you know, we gotta not lose hope.
Yeah, we've done enough Kickstarters to know at this point you have no idea what is going to happen until it ends. So anytime that something slows down, we're always like, oh, you know, like starting to tear our hair out, but we're starting to learn that tearing your hair out doesn't help. And you really can't call it until it's over, so we'll see.
I've seen plenty of Kickstarters in the last like 48 hours all of a sudden like hit their goal and blow it away.
Yeah,
that happened to us last time around. We actually did a Kickstarter for the second issue of Tracy Queen, which is a comic book that I write and he illustrates. And we launched it at the end of February of this year. So we had this Kickstarter going as the pandemic was really taking off in America, and it was just sitting there for weeks. And we were like, should we pull it? Like, should we just cancel the whole thing? We put so much work into it, I don't know. And then in mid-March, Kickstarter started offering a one-week extension to all existing projects that were ongoing because people were scared and people weren't spending money, and they were like, here, if you want it, you can have it. So we were like, yeah, let's go for it. So we got an extra week, and in that week, it took off.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, we went from, like, not even close to our goal to, like, blowing past it short window of time. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how that worked, but it was pretty amazing.
Yeah. Happy it worked, though.
I do have a question about that. I remember we reviewed your first book. It had Tracy Queen and had another book called Pack. Now, I think if I'm you collected those later, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Into another project. Yeah. So talk about that a little bit. What ran in the other issues, and what have you collected into their own title?
I think that you were on our first or second anthology. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it was still very small. I think the first anthology had 4 comics in it,
yes.
2 of which were things that we had teamed up on, Tracy Queen and Pack. And then 2 other projects from other creators. So since then, the anthologies, we started doing them quarterly. We were putting one out every 3 months for about 2 years until we realized that was insane. We can't keep that up.
Yeah.
So now we're doing 2 a year, and they've gotten much bigger. So the one that we're funding with Mr. Guy is themed origins. So it's all stories about beginnings and, you know, origins, obviously. it's too early. My vocabulary is not up to par. But in that collection, we have 14 short comics by, I think, 27 creators, including cover artist. So it's 120 pages. It's going to be perfect bound. It's like a very big book. And that still is including Tracy Queen and Pack. So in each anthology, we've had 8 pages of our ongoing stories. and then basically, when we have published enough of those stories to do a standalone issue, then we kickstart an issue of Tracy Queen or Pack. So at this point, we've got 2 issues of Tracy Queen and 2 issues of Pack out, and we are, after this Kickstarter, hopefully going to be kickstarting issue 3 of Pack.
Hmm.
My voice is getting scratchy. Can you?
Yeah,
that's fine.
Sorry.
Okay. At one point, you sent out a call for submissions. Are you still doing that? Are you still looking for people, or do you have enough creators?
Well, we're still looking. Technically, our submissions are always open. Like, somebody can send us something anytime. Sorry, my voice is really getting scratchy.
It happens. This is the show to do it on, so no worries. No worries.
Scratchy voice show. we're always taking submissions, but now that the anthologies have themes, we put out a call for submissions every time that we come up with a new theme and start working on it. We're kind of holding off right now because we had been publishing on the 15th of January and then the 15th of July.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, schedules have been thrown into the same
chaos.
Craziness that everything else is in. So we're holding off a little bit on our next call for submissions, kind of waiting to see what happens with this Kickstarter and this anthology before we decide when the next one is coming out. So we haven't done one yet, but we will soon.
For anybody in the future, for when you do put a call out, how would they find out about that? Would that be through your website?
Through our website, through Twitter, through Facebook. Yeah, I mean, you know, we're Oneshi Press on pretty much any platform. And we'll put out announcements. But actually, you know, one thing that I wanted to add to that was if we get a submission that we really like and we haven't yet decided on a theme for the next one, that submission itself will become part of our early collection.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll help us determine what the theme for the next anthology is. So, like, you know, we'll get like a few that we really like and we're like, okay, what's the common theme here? And then we'll make that the theme of the next anthology. So, you know, we encourage people to submit their ideas to us at any point, you know, really. And
there is a submissions page on our website.
Yeah.
That's the easiest place to go to. So if you go to oneshipress.com, on the top bar there's a little link for submissions, and that'll show you what all the newest news is.
Do you get a lot of people submitting?
More and more every time.
Yeah. It's pretty surprising.
Yeah, now that we've been rolling for a while, I think it's pretty much out there that we do good anthologies and that we're decent to work with, I hope, because we try really hard right. to be good to work with. This time, like I said, we've got 14 short comics in the anthology, and we had to turn down quite a few. So,
which is a bummer, but it's also like, wow, we're getting enough that we're, you know, we have to be picky.
We're like rolling around in
yeah.
submissions.
It's a good problem to have.
right.
Yeah.
So what comics did you guys read as kids or you know, young adults or whatever that really inspired you to want to become comic book artists, writers, publishers, you know, all that good stuff?
Well, so I really loved, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics, Stan Sakai's Yosagi Ojimbo comics. I had, you know, a bunch of the old, like, Wolverine comics. Had a pretty big stint following Superman for a while. Let's see. I loved, like, all the Image comics and Spawn. I followed Spawn for a long time. Later on, you know, started to get into, like, Witchblade and Darkness. But really, I think formatively, it was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
So can
I
mean, you see okay. your shirt? He's wearing it.
Oh, yeah, I don't have PS.
Oh, yeah, see the logo.
nice. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, cool.
You're in good
yeah, so you guys were great. So you guys used to go to, are there comic shops in your town? I mean, are they open now, or?
Well, we didn't grow up here.
Ah, I see.
So actually, the comic book store here in Missoula is in the process of moving right now. So I don't think that their new location is open yet, but they closed when the pandemic hit, and I don't think that they've reopened. But he grew up in...
As a kid, yeah, I haunted comic book shops that were near me. You know,
did
like
you go to 7-Elevens
just...
and stuff like that, or was that post 7-Eleven?
Oh, yeah. 7-Elevens, is that what you asked?
Yeah. You go to convenience yeah. stores and get
yeah,
it all.
Yeah, convenience stores, the 7-Elevens, comic book stores, all of them. And I mean, you know, it was just, actually, there was even like a bagel store near me that sold comics. I mean, they were just everywhere, you know? And like, no, yeah. No. yeah. And I would just grab them every chance I could, you know? If it was a choice between like eating and like getting that, like, that new comic of the series I was following, I mean, sometimes eating took a backseat, you know?
Yeah, it's funny how comics used to be everywhere, and now it's just like, well, there's a couple of places that carry them, but, you know, they used to be like you rode your bike anywhere you wanted to go, there was a comic book there for you.
Yeah.
See, I never
had a local comic.
Oh. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead, Lindsay.
Go ahead.
I grew up in the middle of nowhere in the country in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and I don't even know where there was a comic book store near me. Like, there weren't any in the towns that I was in regularly, and, like, when we went into the city, like, I didn't know where to look. So I don't think I was actually in a comic book store until maybe I was in college. But I had a few friends that read comics, and sometimes, like, they would pass me one.
Yeah.
So I read some X-Men, and some Batman comics, and I think that's it when I was a kid. But I read the hell out of every single Calvin and Hobbes book.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
That was another one. I really loved Calvin and Hobbes.
I still have every single book in a collection on my shelf over here, and when I, like, if I can't sleep at night, I will often read myself back to sleep with Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah, and it's a good choice, too.
It was super fundamental to my growing up process, I think.
Spaceman Spiv, I love it.
Mm. Yeah.
Nice.
All right. So, like, in your, I mean, obviously this year is like a weird year or whatever, but you're going to still keep publishing, because you guys seem to have, like, the drive to get, to start an empire of comic book greatness or whatever. You
well,
seem
I
to have.
Do have the drive to start an empire.
Yes, I think you guys are going to do. Are you going to become big? I think so, yeah. You guys got the love and you guys have the smarts to do it, you know?
Hey, I think we're smart.
Cool.
All right.
I mean, are both of you guys writers, or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lindsay
does. Did you start out at
writing, honestly.
Well, kind of. I do most of the writing on, like, the website, and I wrote Crazy Queen and Pack.
I mean,
and I'm a lifelong writer, but JL is what I would call a storyteller.
Yeah.
He does primarily visual art, but he also does a lot of writing.
That's great. Now, how is Missoula, Montana? Is it a nice place to live? I know it's quite cold.
No, don't move here.
It's terrible. It's awful here. It's terrible, and it's not pretty, and there's not a great local art scene or music scene.
I can't see
or
mountains
comedy
out
scene.
Every window.
Come here if you like nice stuff.
There's not a beautiful river that you can go walk along at any time.
On the river or anything.
It's pretty cool. There's a really cool, like, local art scene, and a lot of care is put into like supporting local artists, and it's been really neat. It's cool here.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Are
you guys ever? I'm not aware of everything you guys are. Are you guys ever gonna do? Or have you done, like, a straight superhero book, like Super Guy, you know, or that's not really something that interests you?
I would say we haven't, between the two of us as creators, we have not done anything like that. But we've had quite a few superhero-based short comics in the anthologies.
Okay.
And actually, like, I think we've had more of them that are sort of critical of the superhero genre than not. We had one that was sort of like an anti-hero comedy, and then we had one that was like a far future take on like how people way in the future will interpret superheroes.
You're talking about Scripture by Brendan Roe?
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah,
so good.
But we have just recently started working with Lenata Peppers, who is actually local here in Missoula, who is a Northern Cheyenne and Crow activist. And she is writing a story called Quantum about an indigenous superhero whose sister goes missing at the same time that she's discovering that she has superpowers. Yeah. So we're publishing the second part of that in our upcoming anthology, in Origins. And it's illustrated by James C. Mason, and it's all done traditional art, so all by hand.
Cool.
And it is gorgeous, and it's a really interesting take to have, you know, this woman who is living on the reservation and teaching college on the reservation. Her sister goes missing, and she sets out to find her sister, and at the same time is having all of these bizarre things happening to herself and trying to figure out how can she use these powers to find her sister. So I think that is probably so far the most serious, like, superhero story that we've worked on that I can think of.
So yeah, that's in terms of us as publishers.
Right.
As far as us as creators, I mean, I kind of think probably if I were to create a superhero story, it would land somewhere between like The Tick and like The Boys. Like, it would probably be a little like very comical, but like also like a lot of like commentary and, you know, like that kind of like, I mean, The Boys is like so dark. But it's like really funny and raises some really good points. And then like The Tick also like raises a lot of really good points, and there's a lot of social commentary, but it's also like got that just gonzo like slapstick over the top kind of humor. And who doesn't love that? I mean, I guess some people don't, but I really do, you know, like,
no, it's fun stuff. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, that's cool, man.
Humor into most of the things that we do.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Pack is pretty serious. Children of Gaia is very serious. Yeah, that's true.
So Pack is our series about vigilante dogs in Brooklyn. Right. And it's very dark and gritty, and everybody in it takes themselves very seriously, but we definitely allow for some silly moments in there.
Well, you have to, kind of, you know?
Yeah, I think kind of the darker the theme, unless you're really committed, the more you need some moments of levity.
Levity, yeah.
And Tracy Queen, which is our series about a cam girl turned porn star who be a gangster, and who creates a an army of sci-fi cyborg clones. Because, you know, why not? That series actually is very serious, because I'm taking on a whole lot of themes that I find very important about sexual empowerment and feminism and the importance of those two things going together. But I figured, hey, this is a graphic novel. I'm going to have some cyborgs. I'm going to have a talking raccoon. I'm going to have a porn star army that she has to go up against, because why not? It's a graphic novel. But also because I really felt like I was going to have a hard time selling a comic book about sexual empowerment in a porn star unless I made it bombastic and funny at the same time.
Yeah.
So that one was very consciously funny and serious at the same time.
That's funny. You guys write movie scripts or TV scripts or anything like that? You do any of that stuff?
I've tried.
So, I mean, well, Children of Gaia, which we're on our third book now, we have like five planned. We've also been kind of low-key like writing that as a script for a TV show. We have what we call like the main story. When we're working on the main story, that's like this script that we're designing to be like 10 seasons long, 10 episodes a season, hour-long episodes. We've been working on it as a group. There's now like six of us, seven of us working on it at any given time, and it's really involved. There's a lot of world building, there's a lot of backstory, there's a lot to know about it. In the meantime, we're putting out these books. We have Great Nations and we have War and Horses are the two books that we have out, and we're working on a few more, and they're what I would call like illustrated books, illustrated novels. They're not comics, right? So it's more like an illustrated page and then like text around it or next to it, or like two illustrations on a page divided by text, that kind of thing.
But more writing.
The Great Nations and the War and Horses, that's in the Children of Gaia story frame.
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah, Children of Gaia is this series, and then we have a bunch of books out in that series.
We also have a bunch of short comics out in the Children of Gaia series that come out in the anthologies. I think we have four now? Four that are out, and a fifth one coming.
There's going to be a fifth one in Origins, in this anthology coming up.
So eventually we're hoping to do a collection of short comics set in the Children of Gaia universe, once we've got a nice big thick collection.
Nice.
That's awesome. Alright, well,
this is all right.
Getting back to what was you guys are just on Kickstarter, you Indiegogo, you do any other platforms or...
So far, we've done our fundraising on Kickstarter, and we have not had to like redo a campaign on Indiegogo, which I have seen work for quite a few people.
I've seen that too.
Yeah, but Kickstarter has such a strong community for indie comics that even though it's more of a risk to do a Kickstarter, so far that's been what we've done. And Kickstarter really has a great way of reaching people who you might not find through your own, you know, website or social media or, you know, the general outreach that you usually do. Because people literally go to Kickstarter with money in their pockets and say, I want to support an indie comic today. And that is just, like, you can't buy that kind of crowd, unless you go to a convention, which we're not doing right now.
Well, you have gone to conventions, right, in your area and out of town and stuff like that. Yeah, that's another way of getting your... name out and stuff like that, and shaking hands with the fans and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Do you guys sell to Europe at all, or no? You guys do out of the country, or?
I mean, we have like individual like direct sales in Europe and all over. Yeah, sure. And a lot of our contributions to our anthologies are from Europe. I mean, we've figured out
we dabble
the postal system well enough that
we try. And we do have a Patreon, where sort of like the hardcore Onishi Press fans can help support us, you know, with monthly subscriptions. And that is not our main source of income, I would say, but it is like the core bedrock of how we keep doing this every month. And by the way, anyone listening, our Patreon subscribers get all kinds of very cool stuff. We do weekly downloads of the work in progress that we are creating, mostly JL, because he does most of the art. And, you know, sort of behind-the-scenes looks at what we're working on, and all of the stuff that we publish, depending on the level at which you subscribe, in either digital and or print format. So there's lots of rewards at Patreon. Come on over. The water's great.
So is it Onishi Press at Patreon, or how does it, you know, how does...
I think it's patreon.com/Onishi Press, I think. We'll get you there.
Yeah,
there's also a link I see at the top of your onishipress.com site.
Right. We actually, you know, it's like when you forget phone numbers because they're all stored in your cell phone now. Yeah. Like, all of our links are on our website. So sometimes we're like, oh, yeah, what is the link to that? You know, like, we're just our website leads to pretty much everything. So,
well, to the people that are, you know, to our fans or the people that are, will go on our website, listen to our podcast, or please buy their books. These are really nice people. And they're really hardworking people, and they're, you know, we need more people like these guys in order to bring back comic books. You know, not that they're going away or anything like that, but, you know, these are the folks that need you to buy their books.
Well, we've talked about you guys, and we've reviewed you years ago, and we've watched the company grow, and now just talking to you and hearing how hardworking you guys really are, and you're expanding, which is wonderful, so that hard work is paying off. So we would at least implore everyone listening to just go check out the site, go look at the Kickstarter. It's great. I mean, everything you guys have been doing, it's paying off, and it's nice to see all that hard work. And the fact that you're bringing in so much diverse talent, like you said on your press release, from throughout the world. You know, you've got creators, artists from Europe, I think you said, and just other areas. So it's nice to see everybody coming together and working on these projects.
Thank you.
That means the world to us.
It really does, because we do work a lot.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
But really, I mean, working on the anthologies particularly is just so rewarding. Like, I know that anthologies are a tough sell for whatever reasons exist. I can't figure it out, because I don't understand why you wouldn't want one volume full of short comics where every page you turn, you don't know what's happening next. If you don't like something, you just flip to the next one. You might find some new artist or writer that you love and you want to follow their work. Like, it's like a buffet. I love it. But we know that within the comics industry, anthologies are sort of a notoriously, like, hard sell. And so, you know, it's been a hard slog to decide that we're gonna keep doing anthologies, because we've been getting a lot of, you know, retailers don't want them, for the most part, and it's tough. But getting those submissions from people literally all over the world, and from, like, so many different backgrounds and perspectives, it's mind-blowing. Like, we've worked with people from all over South America, from the Philippines, we've shipped to New Zealand, and we have lots of submissions coming in from Europe every time we do an anthology. I mean, we're just, the depth and breadth of the talent that we get to look at in submissions alone and then to publish is astonishing. I think it helps me want to keep working in indie comics and to keep working so hard, because I know that there's so many brilliant people out there who are working so hard, and most of them are doing it knowing that this isn't going to be a huge payday for them. You know, they just are doing it because they love it, and we're working as hard as we can to get their work out. And it feels like we're doing something good. And it makes me want to keep going.
Are anthologies more popular, like, overseas than in the U.S., or is that just...
That's a good question. They might be. I don't have, like, the numbers to
say that,
but we do get quite a few submissions from Europe every time around, which makes me think there might just be sort of a bigger market over there.
Yeah. It's funny, because, I mean, like, the group of us, we love the anthology stuff. I mean, it's fun to turn the page and have something completely new, you know, one part of the book you may not like, but you find more stories that are amazing. It's really sad that anthologies are looked at that way.
Yeah.
Well, it's strange to say, but it's almost considered a niche market, just in the terms that a lot of people reading books know what they want and they're looking for something specific. So anthologies are really for people that appreciate the medium, or they're looking for something bigger in the industry, in the medium.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, personally, like, if I go to a restaurant I've never been to and there's a menu I've never looked at and there's like 50 things on that menu and I have to choose one, I get a little like, what if I choose the wrong thing? You know, like, do I want this or that? Or do I go with the sandwich or the platter? Oh, God, you know. But like, if I'm in a buffet, I'm like, oh, cool, I'll take a little bit of this, I'll take a little bit of that. You know, and I'm just like, smiling, like filling my plate up, you know.
Yeah,
I like that analogy.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, definitely.
Any day I will choose a buffet over, you know, having to make one choice from the menu.
In the old days.
Before 2020.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to have a buffet right now.
Ah, God.
But no, yeah.
Even Florida has an open air buffet. Right. Get your comics anthologies now, people, because buffets might not be back for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a PSA.
Listen, thank you very much for actually getting up so early, which goes against the grain of your regular schedule. And good luck on all your projects. I will say it's impressive that you got 10 under your belt with some other stuff. Anyway, we'll have the site linked up to this blog post. If anybody's interested, you can go and find all this stuff. Any parting words you got?
Go to the Kickstarter. Support our Kickstarter.
And thank you so much for having us here.
Anytime.
Great questions. I feel like it was a great conversation. I really enjoyed myself. I hope other people will enjoy this episode. That was awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. This has been a blast.
Come on back whenever.
It's a good way to start the day.
You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
Your Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.